Today's podcast is brought to you by Howie's new book, Paperboy. To order today, go to HowieCarshow.com and click on store.
Better strap yourself in. It's time for the Howie Car Show.
Some of you complain that I don't take enough of your questions. No comment.
Ha ha ha, Ernie, ha ha.
The problem is people are always going to compare your first term to Obama's. But I think there are actually a lot of positive similarities. Obama got us out of a recession. You got us out of a pandemic. Obama got bin Laden. You got OJ.
That wasn't so bad.
What are you talking about? I bombed.
You had some good stuff. The cancer bit.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
This has been coming since the 1960s. The people that were burning down college campuses, those people are now in the Faculty Senate trying to encourage these students to do the same.
All of it began the first time some of you who know better and are old enough to know better let young people think that they had the right to choose the laws they would obey as long as they were doing it in the name of social protest.
Rump swabs, hacks, and moon bats beware. It's Howie Carr.
844-500-4242, the number here on the Howie Carr Show. I'm not Howie Carr. I'm Aaron Chadbourne, sitting in for Howie today while he travels back to Massachusetts. But it's great to be with you. You might know me from WGAN up in Maine, where I was formerly senior policy advisor to Governor Paula Page, who was a great governor of the state of Maine, and we certainly wish that he were still here. But thank you for being with us. We were talking earlier in the show about this story with Governor Kristi Noem. And we have to take it with a grain of salt because she wrote this into a manuscript, which she's apparently submitted for a book, and it leaked out. And there's this anecdote of her having a hunting dog that wasn't really taking to its training. It had too much energy, wasn't a good hunting dog. And then it attacked some chickens, and then she had to put the dog down. So she took it out and she shot it herself. And she told this story, I think, to talk about how she's not afraid to do the hard things and tough decisions, what it takes. And it's being widely ridiculed. And people are saying, and a lot of people like dogs, and they're saying this is disqualifying. So I wanted to dig deeper, and I wanted to get some perspective on the story. So joining us now on the line is Heidi Sampson, who is a state representative and also a farmer, which I thought could bring some interesting perspective. Heidi, welcome to the Howie Carr Show.
It is Aaron Chadbourne and not Howie Carr, but it's nice to hear your voice.
Good to talk to you as well, Heidi. So I wanted to get your perspective on this because my first thought whenever I hear a story like this, and what was really kind of appalling to me is the people who are dunking on this story the loudest are all of kind of the pro-abortion voices. So when it comes to an unborn child, they're fine with whatever. But when it comes to a dog, you know, they're clutching their pearls. But when you move beyond that, right, there's this story that I'm just wondering, like, did she not know her audience? Is this something that resonates with people who've been responsible for raising animals and protecting people from them? How did this anecdote land with you when you started hearing about it?
Well, there's a lot to unpack here. First, I thought, who is she writing this to? And then my reaction was that of a farmer with working dogs and livestock. And then I reacted pretty strongly in support of what she said. I understand why she uses it as an example and what she's talking about. But then secondly, as someone who is a public servant, not a politician, Aaron, and a policymaker dealing with the public at large, you got to be picking up what's being put down around you and our society. And you gave Taylor a hard time about his take on this. Society has shifted. And to your point, the irony of the anti-life crowd, so to speak, who don't in Maine couldn't care less if we kill babies just as they're being born, but yet pitch a fit about, oh my gosh, we need to even, you know, have proper burials for coyotes. So, I mean, we're kind of upside down in a lot of ways, but the reality is, as a farmer, as someone who lives off the land, so to speak, and she lives on a large farm, and she's out hunting, and they hunt for food, and dogs are there for a job. Everything on a farm has a job. And animals, whether it's your livestock, they either produce milk or food or whatever. The dogs that are working dogs, they are hardwired for a specific task. If they are unable to do that task, they need to be, you know, relegated to either a different, you know, they just become pets and lawn ornaments, or they have to be put down, especially if they're attacking your livestock, which is an investment.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting because I think that is the part here that is disqualifying about her. I think it's really helpful to have the context of like what she was trying to say was that as a farmer with working dogs, you think about it differently. I just think it's a lapse in judgment for her to talk about it to a generalist audience and think it was going to resonate, right? I think that's what she's missing here.
I totally agree with that. And I am kind of poking fun at the people that are sort of your marshmallow, you know, snowflake crowd. I have to poke fun at them. But we have more and more of that. The society is grooming people to be thinking this way. So I'm not surprised that folks are reacting the way they are. And we have less and less people who are farmers with working livestock dogs who do what she does, do what I do, what others who have even bigger farms do. There are less and less of them. We don't understand what's involved, you know, as a society in producing food for the people to eat. They don't, you know, it doesn't come out of a cow packaged in a saran wrap with styrofoam. I mean, there's a lot.
And I think that might be what someone from South Dakota takes for granted. And Grace, I know you and I talked about this earlier. You know, you were saying, what was she thinking? I think maybe she's just used to being around people who understand that environment, understand working with animals, understand working for food like Heidi does.
Yeah. And one thing I would add in here, though, which I think was a miscalculation, and it's nice to meet you, Representative Sampson, is that the way you're describing it, like very black and white, and if someone had said to me, oh, this is something that she had to do, I might think, okay, well, what is it like on a farm? I'm not familiar with farm life. But I think part of it, when you read her description of it, there was something about it that was, it was like lacking any sort of, I don't know, I don't want to say compassion, but there was something where she could have, I guess, highlighted the nuance, and it seemed like she just really didn't like the dog. I know there were other elements of it. I know the dog was going after livestock, but there was something chilling about the fact that she didn't seem to like this dog, and she was describing the dog in a way that I think a lot of people could relate to a rambunctious puppy behaving that way. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like she had the opportunity to put more color to it, and she actually made it weirder.
Yeah, if this was a draft manuscript, my bet is the editor's going to eliminate this because it's, you know, I have not read the draft, so I don't even know. I'm just saying my reaction was, oh, my gosh, there's so many factors here with working dogs that you have to do. And I will say, to your point, Grace, that sometimes you have to put this matter of fact. These are the choices I have here. If a dog is, and you know, if you live in a city and you have a little Yorkie, Aaron,
they're a lot. They're a handful. You make a joke, but like, you know, they're a lot to deal with.
I know. They are cute, but they are not working livestock dogs. They are far from it. But people will literally take their dogs to psychotherapy. Somebody with working dogs, and mine are big, and I don't have time or the money or the resources to take my dogs to someone who's going to now work with them and reprogram them. A lot of these kinds of dogs are hardwired, and either they come out and they've got what it takes or they don't. So, I mean, I have family that have hunting dogs, and they're it's very matter of fact, but that's the line of business you're in. So somewhat of the, you know, so humanizing, anthropomorphizing the animals into more like human-like characteristics. We who deal with livestock all the time, you've got to sort of couch that and kind of put it on the side because
yeah, I heard that. That's you're on Team Taylor. I definitely get what you're putting down, Representative Sampson. I do want to ask you, though.
I like what Taylor said.
Life's not a Disney movie. That's bottom line.
That should be your tagline, Taylor. I wanted to ask you, Heidi, though, if you could respond. Some of the texters and other people are saying, well, she should have just given the dog to a shelter or put it up for adoption. Ooh. How do you react to that?
Well, I don't know all the nuances. My first reaction is no, because if this dog is out of control and is attacking things, I don't know if it went after, you know, you've got to take into consideration children. As the dog ages, those patterns become more ingrained. And so is it manifesting a trait that is sort of hardwired in them and needs to not continue? And how many dog shelters are out in North Dakota? I mean, there may be a logistical issue there. I mean, we have dog shelters all around here in York County. I mean, it's pretty popular, but you're talking about a whole different part of the country where it's may not be as accessible too. So we have to take that into consideration.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that analysis. And while we have you, you do a lot in education policy. And I wanted to just get your quick take on what we're seeing at the college campuses throughout the country right now. As you see these protests that are out of control, these administrations who don't know how to handle it, what's your assessment of where we've gone wrong?
Well, these are your little snowflakes that don't really know anything about reality. And I think, you know, we've been flying people, or Biden, but the Biden administration is flying people from the southern border into the inner part of our country. I think these folks should be packed up on a plane and take them right over to Palestine, right over there. Go to the Middle East. I used to live in the Middle East. I would, you know what, as an education person who thinks teachable moments are extremely important, this would be a profound teachable moment for all of these self-righteous people who think they know what they don't know. Put them over in a country like, you know, somewhere in the Middle East. It doesn't really matter anywhere, you know, and have them just spend a few weeks there. See how well that turns out. I think they'd come back with a different attitude if they even came back at all.
It's a good point. Heidi Sampson, representative from Maine, thanks so much for joining us here on the Howie Carr Show.
You're welcome.
You're listening to Howie Carr. I'm Aaron Chadbourne, 844-500-4242. We'll be right back.
The Howie Carr Show returns after this. He's Howie Carr, and he's back.
We are back on the Howie Carr Show. I am Aaron Chadbourne, in for Howie. He will be back tomorrow. And did you see the news over the weekend that Ron DeSantis came for a meeting with Donald Trump? Now, they're billing it as Trump wanting access to the DeSantis donor network, which I think is funny after all the things Trump said about DeSantis during the primary. But it led me to thinking about today's poll question. And with Mother's Day coming up, Taylor, I've been thinking a lot about what to get, you know, what gifts are out there. My sister's a mom. Like, what do you get people for Mother's Day? You have the Raycon earbuds, right?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
And what's the quality like?
Fantastic. Comparable to any other earbud I've tried, and at a much fairer price point. And they're always making improvements, too. So it's a great product.
Well, today's poll question is brought to you by Raycon. Help mom tune out all the noise this Mother's Day with a brand new pair of Raycon Everyday Earbuds. She'll get that audio quality that Taylor was talking about, and it'll be at a price that you'll love even more. Right now, get 20% off plus free shipping at buyraycon.com/Howie. All right, Taylor, what is today's poll question, and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at howiecarshow.com, is: would you like to see Trump offer DeSantis a position in the Trump administration? Yes, as vice president. Yes, as a cabinet member. No, embarrass him with the Mitt Romney 2016 treatment. Or no, but be nice about it.
I have to say, like, that picture of Mitt Romney out to dinner with Trump, like, that was my first mental image when I heard this story. But I don't think he deserves that. So I think I don't really want to see DeSantis go back to Washington. I'd like him to stay outside, maybe run for president again later. So I'm going to say no, but be nice about it.
37% say no, but be nice about it. 35% say yes, keep him as a cabinet member. 25% say yes as VP, 2% say give him the mitt treatment.
It's interesting. It's flipping back and forth, but also among the good options. I didn't know if people didn't like DeSantis after all of the things that Trump had said about him and the perceived slight to Trump by running against him. But it is interesting that not more people want him to be vice president, don't you think?
I guess, exactly.
I don't think Trump's going to pick someone for vice president who's going to compete with him, which is why I didn't think Kristi Noem was ever really in the running, because I think she has too much of a profile. But I think that definitely rules out DeSantis.
Yeah, anyway. I didn't think Vivek was going to be a candidate either for that same reason. Too much of an ego for both of them to be in contention with each other all the time. It wouldn't work out.
I don't see Trump wanting to share the spotlight. 844-500-4242, the number here. We're short on time, but let's try to squeeze in a call or two. We'll go to Susie. Susie, go ahead. You're here on Howie Carr.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. 25 years ago, I was, I had horses all my life, and the girls I rode with could be a little bit, dramatic. They'd rather see an animal not destroyed, but let it suffer. And I had to put my horse down. And number one, putting a horse down, the easiest way to do it is to shoot it right through the head, right through the top spot. It kills them instantly, because when you give a horse a shot, it doesn't always kill them, and they suffer. But I didn't tell my friends. No one knew until probably 4 years ago. I did not tell them the truth. I just said he died of an old, he just died. I mean, if I had told them, they would have said, I'll pay his bills, because he had a sore that could never be ridden again. They would have gone crazy.
Thanks for the call. That's a tough story, and it's a hard thing to go through. And I think you're absolutely right. The biggest thing I find wrong here is her need to tell the story and to think that it was going to land well. I think it's a real lapse in judgment. Let's grab quickly Jack. Go ahead, Jack. You're on with Aaron Chadbourne on Howie Carr.
Hey, it's Jack from the Cape. Aaron, so excited to hear you on the radio. Awesome. Hey, so I have a reject hunting dog. He hates gunfire, and he's petrified of the water. So we got a great deal on him because they were going to bump him off too. So anyway, I think the choice of words was not great. She should have said we had to put the dog down. And I'm confident that had the book made it to the editing stage, that's probably what would have happened. It's too bad it got leaked out.
Thanks for the call, Jack. And there are a lot of people that take in rescue dogs who are dangerous dogs, and they want to kind of retrain them and reprogram them. And so I think a lot of people feel that way. And I get it. I think this whole thing is just, it's a bizarre story, which again leads me to question why this story leaked out and came out. And I think it's because people were threatened by Kristi Noem, but people love dogs. I think this could be a career ending. We'll try to get to David real quick. Go ahead, David.
Yes, hi. So the representative up in Maine who called in and talked about working dogs on a farm, she's spot on. I grew up in the city. 20 years ago, I went to North Carolina to my cousin's farm, and it's exactly how they treat dogs. They are functional working animals, and that's what they're made for. There is no love. They don't come in the house. They don't snuggle. They don't cuddle. They are functional working dogs. That's it. And if they don't perform, they either move them along if it's possible, or they shoot them. They put them down.
Great call. Thanks for the comments, David. Appreciate it. You're listening to The Howie Carr Show. I am Aaron Chadbourne. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Mike Sobolewski. He was at the Republican convention that happened in Maine over the weekend. He's one of two people that are trying to take on Jared Golden in the upcoming election, and he'll join us right when we come back. You're listening to The Howie Carr Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne.
From the Matthews Brothers Studios.
We're back on the Howie Carr Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne, filling in for Howie today. Thanks for being with us. One of the texters was asking about the Karen Reed trial, and we are going to get to it. Turtle Boy Aiden Kearney will be joining us in the 6 o'clock hour to give us updates of what's been going on. It's the opening statements today, the first day of the trial. The trial is expected to last 6 to 8 weeks, but we'll check in with Turtle Boy at 6 o'clock, and we'll try to get through some of today's other stories before then. I did want to turn to what's going on in politics. And someone joining us right now knows a lot about it. His name is Mike Sobolewski. He is a state representative in Maine, but he's running for Congress right now. He's competing for the right to take on Jared Golden in November. And those of you who know New England know there are very few Republican representatives in New England. In Maine's 2nd District, it's a seat that was held by Bruce Poliquin until Jared Golden essentially stole it from him using ranked choice voting. And Mike is one of two gentlemen who are running to take it back, and he joins us now. Representative Sobolewski, welcome to the Howie Carr Show.
Great. Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
So, Mike, I know you were at the GOP convention over the weekend that they held in Augusta, and after having spent that weekend with a lot of the party faithful, the party activists, what do you take away as the key themes that people are most focused on, whether it comes to Donald Trump or whether it comes to the ways that these blue states like Massachusetts or Maine, where we have complete Democrat control of everything? What are Republican activists fired up about and ready to fight for this November?
They're fired up about their personal rights being taken away. They're fired about the electric bills, about a lot of local issues. The border's important. The economy's important. But people are feeling the pressure and the push right now. Electric bills are going up. The price of food is going up. Price of fuel is going up. It's getting harder for everyday citizens to pay their bills and feed their families, and they're very concerned about it.
Now, you mentioned electric bills going up. I know that you sit on a committee that was hearing a lot of Janet Mills' proposals as it comes to electric vehicles and this kind of backdoor approach by environmentalists up in the state to try to mandate the purchase of electric vehicles going forward. It's something that you fought. For people unfamiliar with that story, what can you tell us?
Well, that was put together by a 150-person petition, a signature petition. Take it to the Board of Environmental Protection. They had to have a...
Wait, 150,000 or 150 people?
No, 150 people. That's all it took to get this whole process started, Aaron. A petition with 150 signatures brought forward by the Natural Resource Council of Maine. They sponsored that. And that got this whole ball rolling. And it was in a public forum down at the Civic Center. When they heard over 1,000 pieces of testimony were submitted or in person. Then it went into a meeting by the BEP after that. I attended that meeting. I was the only elected official, too. They didn't want to rule on this. They were put in a very bad position. So they wanted the legislature to take over, and I put forward a bill to do just that. And we fortunately got across the aisle support, bipartisan support on it from the president of the Senate, the speaker of the House, got my bill through and got the board to actually vote that down 4-2. And then my bill put the nail in the coffin. They'll never be able to do it that way again. It was a tough fight, but 150 people. Can you imagine that, Aaron?
I can. And you know why? It's because this is what people need to pay attention to and understand. When Democrats are in control, like they are right now in Massachusetts, like they are right now in Maine, like they're trying to have control of everything down in Washington, when they're in control, they rewrite the rules to rig it so these backdoor channels work for the, you know, the special interest groups, for the lobbyists to come in and do things in these undemocratic ways. They tell us that they're supporting and protecting democracy, Mike, but they're the ones that are creating these little special interest pathways to undermine the will of the people.
Right. And they don't give any consideration to the unintended consequences. What's going to be happening because of their actions?
Oh, they intend them. They intend those consequences.
Yeah, there you go. But they're unintended to us. I mean, we went through it with the biosolid disposals, part. We're going to go through it now with the Office of New Americans. This is going to be problematic. And for our state the illegal immigration that's coming in. A couple of months ago, I went to Washington, D.C. I met with Senator Collins, asked her for some thoughts, support. How do we deal with this Office of New Americans they're putting in? And the bill itself was problematic. There were a lot of issues with that. We're going to be dealing with this for some time to come.
Well, that's another interesting angle to this because you're a veteran. You've served.
Yes.
When you look at the way in which the government supports veterans or the unmet need for veterans, and then you see the projects going on like the one in Brunswick where they're building free housing for people who entered the country illegally, what's your reaction?
Well, My reaction, of course, I'm very upset about it. I mean, that's the immediate emotional reaction. But, what can we do about this? This bill from the Office of New Americans was just establishing the office itself. The fiscal note was very small, $300,060 is all it was. The backdoor process they used on that one, that bill was never reported out of committee. It went straight into the majority budget. I'd been watching for it for days, getting ready to testify on it. Couldn't figure out what was going on. I didn't know they could do that, Aaron. I didn't know they could take a bill, not bring it to the floor of the House for the people's voice, which is the representatives, to debate it and argue it. They could bypass every bit of that by not reporting it out of committee, throw it into that budget, and have it voted through. So that's a problem. As far as the veterans go, I'm extremely upset that the veterans going to take a back seat in this situation. We have we have veterans in need in our state. They should be coming first before illegals, and that's not happening. We're doing them a grave disservice.
There was also a story, Mike, in the news over the weekend. You were at the Maine Republican Party convention, and one of the changes to the platform was this Defend the Guard amendment. I think Eric Brakey put it forward, which got added to the platform and said that Maine shouldn't send its National Guard troops to any wars that haven't been approved by Congress. I'm interested in your take on that.
Well, I agree with them putting it on the platform. I think it's time to do that. That came up in a bill last year. I voted ought not to pass on it. I voted against the bill ought not to pass. It came into Veterans and Legal Affairs. Senator Farron testified against it. Senator Timberlake testified against it. Doug Farnham, who's the main, the adjutant general of the Maine National Guard, testified against it. He also testified that in 2021, the same bill was basically brought forward, and it was brought forward in 31 other states in the same basic language, and it was voted down everywhere. I do know that Senator King and Senator Collins are attacking it on a different level, and so it's where it is right now. We do have the authorization for use of military force, the AUMF, which was put in place in 2001. It was a joint resolution passed by Congress, and that's what they've been using now to do the military actions that they've been doing. The intent of that was that we live in a world of terrorism, and these guys move very fast, and we need to be able to move as fast as they do. That's why that was passed back then. But this administration, they're not upholding the intent of that. They're reckless with our military, with our weaponry, with our spending. So it's time to put them in check. So I believe Defend the Guard is the right move now.
And before we run out of time, Mike Sobolewski, he's a candidate for Congress. He wants to take on Jared Golden in Maine 2nd District. Mike, I wanted to know, if you go to Congress, I'm good friends with Elise Stefanik. She and I went to college together, known her for a long time. She's, I think, done a great job in Congress kind of fighting back against the universities and the way that they've handled the anti-Semitic and anti-Israel protests that are going on, and she's really called for reforms there. If you were elected to Congress, what do you think Congress can do to really help fix this sinking ship that is American higher education?
Well, we're dealing with it on a different level here in the decline of K-12. I think Heidi was just on probably talking with you about that. Going down into Congress, it's going to be just like it was getting here into the legislature. You get in, you get your feet under you, you figure out what legislation is there, what fight you can join, what the issues are, what fight you can pick. And that's how it was here in the legislature, and I've been very successful with it. When I get down there, predetermining what I'm going to do and how I'm going to attack things is hard to do. I've got to get my feet under me, see who's out there, who needs some support, who I can help with the issues that they're dealing with and the bills that they're dealing with. And I would probably go at it in that way and see what's going on. But education is a problem. And on our university levels is a tremendous problem. That is, they're getting ready to come out into the workforce and into society on their own. And that's a big step. So it'll be interesting when I get down there to see what's in place.
Well, I think it's a failure of leadership. I think it's a failure of values. And I honestly think that we need to stop sending all of our taxpayer dollars to fund these universities until they get their act together and they're really kind of strengthening our country rather than weakening it. Representative Mike Sobolewski, candidate for Congress, thanks so much for joining us here on the Howie Carr Show.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Have a good day.
We'll be right back after the break. I'm Aaron Chadbourne, in for Howie Carr.
If you missed any part of the show, we've got you covered.
You know what, guys? This could be a podcast.
Subscribe to the Howie Carr Radio Network on your preferred podcast platform and start listening to previous shows and exclusive podcast-only features.
It's actually not a bad idea.
The Emperor of Hate, Howie Carr, is back.
You know, Taylor, it's a sad day when whether or not there's going to be peace in the Middle East results on the negotiating skill of one Antony Blinken. Like, if there was anyone that I trusted less to, like, make a better outcome, it's him. Like, he just seems to me, every time I see him, like he's one of these college kids pretending to play Model United Nations and, like, thinks this is, like, a rules-based world where everyone is a honest broker and a good actor. And just it seems like at every turn he's making it worse, don't you think?
He just looks very impish all the time.
You're listening to The Howie Carr Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne, in for Howie today. He'll be back tomorrow. Joining us, as always, is Taylor Cormier, who is the adult supervision today while Howie is off. Yeah, no, not only that he looks impish, but it's like, I think maybe because whenever you see him, he's getting interviewed by NPR about, like, his Spotify playlist. And then, you know, the cocktail parties that he goes to in Georgetown. And it's not really... I mean, he's not living in the real world with all of us. And so
he does sing in a band, and he's not terrible.
He plays an instrument too, right?
I think, guitar or something.
It's some jazz thing, which is fine. Like, he can be talented, and I'm sure he's very well educated. Probably went to all the best prep schools. Well suited for Foggy Bottom, where he can hang out with, you know, the Clintons and the Obamas and Samantha Power. You know, but it's just not... When you're in, where is he today, Saudi Arabia, negotiating this truce with the ceasefire with Hamas, when, by the way, he's doing more to provide Hamas leverage and top cover than anyone. It's just, I don't think anything as good is going to happen from it. And
I believe it was American negotiations that got us into this mess in the first place, wasn't it? Joe Biden gave billions of dollars to Iran, which funded the October 7th attack.
Yeah, I think that's why I was confused by your comment. It was an American negotiation. It was American surrender that really got us into this mess. And that's what the Biden administration is its surrender of American leadership. It's so funny because people talk about, you know, Trump. I listened to Mitch McConnell on Meet the Press this weekend, which that's already two strikes, right? So you got McConnell, you've got Meet the Press, Kirsten Welker. And he was talking about, it's funny because he was saying that he was going to vote for Trump over Biden, which I thought was
your funny. Weekend viewing habits are astounding.
I'm a traditionalist. It's where you know, see, I used to live in DC, and you go to these things because you're interested in, like, how it's being covered and what they're doing. But so on Meet the Press, it was Mitch McConnell, and they were asking about, like, Trump as an isolationist. And, like, what they don't get is that Trump's theory and the theory of those people who support his kind of foreign policy is they do want to see peace through strength, but they want to see us fight in America's interest. They want us to conserve our bloodshed and our treasure for when it matters and when it matters for us. They don't want politicians engaged in these forever wars that are all about factors that don't matter to Americans in their lives. Like, they want something rational and reasonable. But they describe it as dangerous isolationism. But when you look at what Biden is doing, like, it's not isolationism, but it's surrender. It's really allow America. It's the Obama doctrine, right? Allow America, leading from behind. We can't be the leaders of the world. We have to let everybody else succeed. We win by losing. That's the Obama and Biden doctrine. Win by losing. That's my rant. I think it's funny too, because on Meet the Press, it's always sponsored by, like, Boeing, or it's sponsored by, like, these big...
Pfizer.
Yeah, I've never understood watching those pharmaceutical commercials. There's the other thing too, like, do you notice that in the pharmaceutical commercials that they always talk about, like, what version of the disease you can have to be effective for their treatment? They're like mild to severe. It's like, I'm not diagnosing myself or what drug I should be taking. I don't know who they're appealing to, but they're appealing to someone, and it's definitely working. 844-500-4242, the number here on the Howie Carr Show. I do think it's interesting, and the thing I wanted to say about the DeSantis story, and we've been teasing it a bit in the poll question, is that before DeSantis ran for president, I think he had a very strong reputation when it came to Republicans. I think a lot of people look at what he did during the pandemic in Florida, his leadership, and that's a lot of what set him up to think that he might be a candidate for president. And he smelled blood in the water, and all of his consultants and donors told him that Trump was weak. And I do think the moment everything changed for America was when they raided Mar-a-Lago. That was the moment, I think, that Trump became presumptive nominee. It was already kind of assumed he was leading in the polls. But when that happened, that was it. That was it. And that was Donald Trump's moment. And DeSantis, having been told by everyone that he'd be president, stayed in the race too long, fought the good fight. So I've been interested in whether people would, you know, now re-embrace him and whether Trump would re-embrace him. I think that's the big thing for Donald Trump. And we've seen him do it before with Ted Cruz, with Marco Rubio, with a lot of the people. Ben Carson, remember during the presidential primary, was it 2016, where he basically accused Ben Carson of being a maniac with a hammer? And he talked about Ted Cruz's dad, like, assassinating JFK. Like, there are a lot of stuff that Trump said, but then he rehabilitated them and brought them back in. And so this meeting between DeSantis and Trump, I think, is very interesting. And that's why I'm interested to see how, in the poll question, people view what the future role for DeSantis might be. I definitely think that I can understand why Trump would want his help with fundraising. I just don't know if DeSantis donors, the big donor class that gave hundreds of thousands of dollars to support DeSantis only to have him steamrolled by Trump, I don't know if they're going to be feeling great about opening up their, but those people, you have to imagine, they want influence and they want access. It's kind of the same thing that Trump always used to say about how he played the game and why he donated to politicians. That's how these rich donors are probably conditioned to think. And so if DeSantis can bring them along, but here's the question. If you were Ron DeSantis, what position would you want? Would you want to be in the Trump administration? Right? Like, I mean, would you want to be a cabinet secretary? I just have to think, and this is when I worked for Paula Page, he had conversations with the Trump administration about joining it, about certain positions, but his one hard and fast rule was he did not want to go to Washington, D.C. And every time that Paula Page was in Washington, D.C., he hated it.
Yeah, I think DeSantis has his own vision for his trajectory. I don't think being in a cabinet serves that trajectory at all.
But what do you think it is? You think it's just running for president again next time?
Yeah.
And that's the trouble, though.
Be a good,
like, timing
be a good
is
governor until then, and just stick it out.
Well, when we come back, we'll take more of your calls. 844-500-4242. This is the Howie Carr Show, and I'm Aaron Chadbourne.